catching up, a little reviewing, and I wanted to mention a statue that was made by really a black the black obelisk, and an obelisk is kind of a thing probably about that tall, and it's smooth, and it has a little pictures chiseled in it. That's the black obelisk. So there are several pictures in that the black obelisk. So Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria, erected a monument, and it's called the black obelisk. And in this pillar, this stone pillar, there are a number of reliefs. And it's interesting. We have, I think we probably have a picture of an Egyptian king. That's one. This is one of the few others that we have somebody who was a character in the Bible. So we don't have many like that. So that's amazing. So in this stone pillar, there are a number of relief panels showing various kings coming to Shalmaneser. And one of them is Jehu. So when you look at that thing, it would be like a little square, something like that. And it has the words there. You can see it. To me, it's fascinating. So so one of them is the Jehu. And the picture is, with the picture is an inscription that reads, "The tribute of Jehu, son of Omri." Now, Omri was the father of Ahab. So Omri had Ahab, and then he had Ahaziah, and then Joram. All of these came from Omri. And yet, Jehu is called the son of Omri. You all see that? That's kind of funny. He's called the son of Omri when he destroyed most of the family of Omri. Pretty interesting. So it's ironic that Jehu was called the son of the man whose dynasty he had destroyed in order to be king. That's pretty interesting. Now, there are a few other things that I want to mention. Remember, Hazael was the king who had, the man who had killed his predecessor, who was a Ben-Hadad. And so Hazael took the name Hazael. And so Hazael began to cut Israel short. And so he did a pretty good job on it. And what happens is Assyria kind of fades into the background a little bit at this point. So the threat of Assyrian invasion was removed after Shalmaneser's last effort to subdue Syria in 837 B.C. Neither Shalmaneser nor his son was able to threaten Syria again for about 25 years. Isn't that something? So after saying Jehu was not faithful to God, the next verse says, "In those days Israel began to cut Israel." I mean, the Lord began to cut Israel short. So I'm not going to look at all of these things. There are certain things I want to review. We talked about Joash in Judah, and he was elevated to be king because of Jehoiada, the high priest. And so Jehoiada encouraged him and helped him. I don't think Joash could have been king if it hadn't been for Jehoiada helping him out. And we studied Joel the prophet. Remember, we studied Joel the prophet. The first prophet that we study is Obadiah. And the Joel is the next one. And the next one is going to be Jonah. But that'll be a little bit later yet. All right. All right, now the first son Jehoahaz is the first of four generations that's going to sit on the throne. Jehu and then Jehoahaz, the first of four generations of Jehu's descendants that will sit upon his throne. Now, Jehoahaz was very wicked. And remember that I have the map up here, and it is Israel And that would be where Jehoahaz ruled over, and then Judah down here. So those were the two kingdoms. And at that time, the kingdom got very small, very small. And I have some other points about this as we go along. All right. Since Jehoahaz was very wicked, Israel was brought very low under him. I mean, God almost wiped Israel, the northern kingdom, almost wiped them out. At one point, Jehoahaz, there in the northern kingdom, was left with 50 horsemen. That's like cavalry. 10 chariots and 10,000 footmen. You could hardly call it an honor guard. It was just almost nothing. But Jehovah... The Bible says Jehovah takes pity on Israel at this point. And Jehoahaz sought Jehovah's help. And the Lord listened because he saw how Hazael was oppressing Israel. So let me get my Bible here because I want to make a point here. Now, in 2 Kings 13 and verse 22, let's read a little bit of that. All right. Scott, would you want to read a little bit of that? All right. Now, look back in 13. This is 2 Kings 13 and verse 23. Well, no. No, that's look in 2 Kings 13 verse 5. You see? So this second passage that we read is that God said he had compassion upon them and had respect unto them. Why did he have respect? What was there to respect? Why did he respect them? Was it them he respected? The covenant with Abraham, exactly. That's exactly right. So... Now then, there was a king. Now, what have I told you about these kings? The names of these kings. What have I told you about these names? They're very confused because one in one kingdom he's named Joash, and the other kingdom he's named Joash or Jehoash. So we have that problem. Now then, we're having another king, and this is Joash. And he's also called Jehoash. But this is Joash. And he ruled 16 years. And his story is told in 2 Kings 13, 9 through 14, 16. So Joash, or Jehoash of Israel, is the second descendant of Jehu. You see that? How many descendants of Jehu did God say he would give him? Four. Now this is the second one. And one of the things we notice is how God fulfills his promises. To me, that's one of the most amazing things. Jehoash of Israel is the second of four generations of Jehu's descendants who would sit upon the throne of Israel according to the word of the Lord. In 2 Kings 10 and verse 30. All right. Now, Joash, the king of Israel, the king of Judah, died. And he turned out to be a bad fellow. So, when Hazael withdrew from Jerusalem, he left Joash severely wounded. Two of Joash's own officials conspired against him because of the blood of Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada. And so they killed him. They killed him in his bed and buried him in the city of David, but not in the sepulcher of the kings. And this is the second king, the second of the wicked kings of Judah that were not buried with the other kings. See, that's pretty interesting. The second of the wicked kings. So, okay. Amaziah. You remember I told you about Amaziah? He succeeded to the throne. And I'm not going to review everything. What Amaziah succeeded his father. And so Amaziah was not the worst of fellows. But he didn't serve God faithfully. Not really. We are told that Amaziah did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, yet not like David his father. Not like David his father. So he served God in early years as king, but not as zealously as David had. The high places remain in the land, and the people continue to offer sacrifices and to burn incense there. Unfortunately, he became more and more wicked as the years went by. He kind of got a superiority complex in a way, because he went to battle with the Edomites, and he really waxed them. He really defeated them. And then he decided, well, Joash. He said, I'm going to whip Joash too. Now, this is the second descendant of Jehu. I'm going to whip him also. So remember that Joash, when Amaziah said, come and let us look one another in the face. Do you remember that? And so Joash said, now listen, you had just fought the Edomites and you had your way with them. Now you better be careful. You're going to bite off more than you can chew. You better be careful in what you're about to do. So he said, I'm going to do it. So the reason why he did that was because God had a plan. He was going to punish Amaziah because of what he had done. So he said, you better stay at home. Why cause your own downfall and the downfall of Judah? So why did Amaziah suffer so bad? Do you remember what he had done? Remember what he had done with the gods of the Edomites? He took those idols and began to worship them. So he took the gods of the people he had defeated and began to worship them. Now, do you all see that? Why in the world would you pick a god that you just beat those people? What would you expect that God to do now? Yeah, that's right. So when he broke down, Joash broke down about 600 cubits, about 600 feet of the city wall. And he could have done more than that. He could have broken down all the walls. I guess that was more trouble than he wanted to go to. So the two kings met in battle, Beth Shemesh in northwestern Judah, and Joash completely defeated Amaziah's army, captured Amaziah, and brought him to Jerusalem. And there he tore down about 600 feet of the walls of the city. He took the gold, the silver, and other valuables from the temple treasury. He also took Amaziah's own fortune and some hostages and returned to Samaria. So Samaria was where Joash was from at this point. All right, the next king that's going to come along now is the third descendant of Jehu. And this is Jeroboam. Now, have we ever had a Jeroboam in Israel? Who was the first king of Israel? Jeroboam. This is called Jeroboam the Second for obvious reasons. Jeroboam the Second. So Jeroboam lived. It's interesting how long he reigned. He reigned 41 years. Now, why would you think God would allow him to reign 41 years? I think God has a purpose in all this. Why would he let him reign? I think that what God wanted to know. In fact, let me point out. Let me see if I can do this. All right, now you see those two kingdoms now. This is Israel up here in the north, and that became the kingdom of Jeroboam, and this is the kingdom down in the south. Now this one was Uzziah. This is Uzziah, or as he's also called, Azariah. Now look at the two kingdoms there. You have that kingdom up there, all the way here, and this kingdom all the way down here. Do you realize that those two kingdoms together amount to what the original land of Israel looked like? Why was God doing this? Do you believe he was just doing it because, well, who knows? He had a purpose. What was he trying to do? What was he trying to do with Jeroboam? What was he trying to do with Uzziah? Show them, this is what I could do. You see that? If you will be faithful to me, this is what I can do for you. So he let them live. And this is a very, very interesting. I want you to look at Isaiah, the first of Isaiah. We don't have to look at the whole book. All right, now, as you look at Isaiah chapter 1, and we can read in chapter 1. Look in verses 1 and 2, really, just verse 1, really. All right. Jamie, you want to read that? Can you read that verse 1? So, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. And this was also the time when Jeroboam was ruling. So those were the kings that were ruling. So, what was God trying to do? If you will serve me, I can bless you. And so this Jeroboam is described and named as Jeroboam the Second. To distinguish him from Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, the first king of divided Israel. Jeroboam the Second was wicked and did not turn back from the idolatry that was brought, introduced by Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. I've often thought I would hate to have had the legacy of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. How is he described? Every time he's described, the Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, what did he do? Introduced idolatry. Now this Jeroboam, the second, what's he going to do? Follow the course. Same thing. That's what he's going to do. So Jeroboam, the second, was the third descendant. The third descendant of Jehu to rule upon the throne. By the way, how many descendants did God tell Jehu he was going to have? What does that mean? We're getting close to. And it's interesting that when God, I think the evidence is when God fulfilled that fourth promise, that guy didn't live but about 6 months. God said, okay, all right, I've tried. You didn't pay any attention. I'm going to wipe you out. And that's what happens. Because what God, I want you all to understand how patient God has been. You think about this. Can you all think about how patient God has been? For 300 years, He's put up with the situation. And now the end is coming. And when it comes, He's going to wash His hands. And the first kingdom to go away is going to be what? The northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel. And the second kingdom is Judah, and that is going to live, that is going to exist for about 150 years more. Maybe 135 years more. In other words, this kingdom is going to last about 135 something like it, years longer than this one does up here. And when you think about that, this kingdom up here, Israel, had a lot going for it. They had a very powerful capital up there. Samaria was one of the finest building sites in the ancient East, in the Near East. They had a lot of things going for them. And look at how the territory they possessed over here. See that? So you would think, why would they go first? Do you know the answer? They were always idolatrous. You see that? There was never any king that God would say, well, I think since you're doing pretty well, God did not ever say that. What He did say was, I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to give you a chance. But after a while, then what did God say? It's over. That's what He said. So now what we have, you might imagine that God has pulled the plug. And it's not going to last much longer. Yes, I think so. Yeah, that's right. He was trying to, I think he was kind of going to the nth degree. Just say, if you will serve me, this is what I could do. And then they wouldn't do that. What alternative did that God have left? There was no alternative. Nothing but destruction. And I think about things. I think about our situations. I think about people who are given chances. And then after a while, they ignore the chance. And ignore the chance. And ignore the chance. And eventually, you know what happens. God removes any further opportunity. That happens in our day also. So, the Bible does not tell much about Jeroboam's deeds, but during his reign, God continued to save Israel from her enemies, 2 Kings 14:26 and 27. God sought to show Israel His mercy in order to bring them back to Himself. He explained His purpose. By the way, do you understand why would God explain His purpose? And how, through whom did He explain His purpose? Prophets, such as Isaiah and Micah and others. He explained His purpose. He warned, He exhorted people through the prophets. He had already sent Israel at this time, Obadiah and Joel. They're the earliest of the writing of the written prophets. Now we see a second group coming along, beginning with Jonah and including Amos, Hosea, Isaiah, and Micah. That's going to be the next group that comes along. So he ruled about Now, Jeroboam ruled about 26 years before Uzziah began to rule in Judah. Then their rules overlapped about 15 years. Under their territories, under their rules, the territories of Israel and Judah, if combined, would have almost equaled the extent of Solomon's empire. Isn't that amazing? So one of the factors that made this expansion possible was that Assyria was in a period of decline between the reign of Shalmaneser III, 859 to 824, and that of Tiglath-Pileser, 745 to 727. A lot of Isaiah has connection with Tiglath-Pileser and Shalmaneser. But Israel prospered. But the prosperity was illusory. What did they have to count on? In other words, what did Israel say? Well, I know God is doing this. He's not going to continue to do it. So what are we going to be able to count on? He's going to remove it. They ought to have known that. So as soon as Jeroboam died, Israel collapsed like a house of cards. The end of Israel was very nigh. And what are we going to have left when Israel is gone? You remember, that's one of the periods. Judah alone. See that? We'll have Judah alone. It is chilling to realize how quickly the nation went from prosperity of Jeroboam's day to utter destruction only 25 years later. See that? 25 years later, Israel is going to fall. And they will be no more. And you can look on the map and you'll try to find Israel. You're not going to find Israel. It'll be gone. And you know what you will find instead? The nation of Assyria. I don't know. Let me see if I can get this. Nope. Let me go a little bit further. All right. Now, this is a good map here. This is the divided kingdom in the days of Jeroboam II of Israel and Uzziah of Judah. So you see the from here all the way down to here, down to Ezion-Geber. All right, let me go a little bit further now. Now then, look. What do you see now? Is Israel out there? See, it's gone. What is in the place? The Assyrian Empire. Well, that's what's up there. And as you read, one of the things I'm trying to teach the young men about Isaiah is that when you read Isaiah, Assyria is at the forefront of Isaiah's prophecy until you get to the latter part of the book. I don't know if you know this or not, but I want you to turn to Isaiah 39. All right, Isaiah 39. And I want to read a little bit of this to you. Put this down. All right. Now, this is chapter 39 of Isaiah. At that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, the king of what? Babylon. What we see here, we're going to see a transition from Assyria and God's dealing with Assyria to Babylon. That's the transition we see here in this part. So at that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he heard that he had been sick and was recovered. And Hezekiah was glad of them, and he showed them the house. In fact, let me let someone else read this. Jamie, you want to read that? Are you at 39? All right. Read several verses there, starting in verse 1. All right, now let me ask you this. I don't know if you know this or not, or if you've thought about it, but that's what I'm trying to teach you, these young men, these students. What could Hezekiah have told Merodach-Baladan about? What had happened recently? Well, there had been this tremendous army that had been defeated. 185,000 men, and God had said, they won't even throw a stone against the city. I'm going to wipe them out. I'm going to put a hook in their nose, and I'm going to turn them back by the way they came. He could have told them. And if he had told those emissaries from Babylon, now, let me tell you, men, what has happened. We had this enormous army out here. It was an Assyrian army right out here on that area. He could have taken them out there and said, that was the area. And our God sent his angel and slew 185,000 of those men, those soldiers. And by the way, those were the leading soldiers. They weren't just the rank and file. What would that do to an army? It would remove their captains and all that stuff? The bulk of the army, the head of the army? Now this Merodach-Baladan, what could he say? What could he conclude? Man, if we go and try to attack them, this God of the Hebrews, man, he's not somebody you want to mess with. See that? And I just wonder. But instead, let's go a little bit further. All right? Let me let you read a little bit further. Verse 3. All right, now let's... Where did these men come from? I think that Hezekiah would have said, they came all the way from Babylon. Wow. That's impressive to him. Right? Okay, read a little bit further now. All right. Thank you. But hang on just a minute. So what is Isaiah telling Hezekiah is going to happen? All these things are going to be carried to Babylon. And do you know what else is carried to Babylon? Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, captives. They're going to be carried too. So go ahead and read a little bit further. I appreciate you reading that. See that? Okay, go ahead. Is that something to be glad of? Well, yeah. It could have been worse. But who's worse? Could have been worse for... What about Daniel? See, Hezekiah is doing things that are going to adversely affect his own descendants. Listen, I want to ask you all, how much thought do you give to your descendants? How much thought do you give to your descendants and what's going to happen to them afterward? Sometimes I don't think we give much thought to our descendants. I don't think Hezekiah was giving the right amount of thought to his descendants. Well, that'll be all right as long as I'm okay. That's not something, that's not a way I can think of. So I really, but do you see the transition? I always like to picture it like a weather vane. Got a weather vane up there and it go this way and that way, and so the wind is blowing this way. And so it's blowing this way, Assyria. Now the wind shifts. Now it's blowing this way. And what is that going to be? Babylon. You see that? And this is what happens. That's amazing to me. You know what it proves? It proves the Bible is inspired, doesn't it? It does. All these things happen. So, anyway. So, that's fascinating to me. Okay. Now, the next thing that we're going to do, we're going to study Jonah the prophet. But I want to say just a word or two, but then I'm going to close and not go on with this. Jonah the prophet. Jeroboam began his rule about 786 B.C., and Jonah prophesied during the days of Jeroboam. The record says of Jeroboam, he restored the border of Israel from the entrance to Hamath. That's all the way up there in the north. Let me see. There's a place up here called Lebo Hamath. So it's, I don't see the map. I don't see it on the map. But it's meaning the entrance down here to Israel, all the way down here. So let me go ahead and say what that says. He restored the border of Israel from the entrance of Hamath, which is Lebo Hamath, to the Sea of Arabah, according to the word of Jehovah, the God of Israel, which he spoke by Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, who was of Gath-Hepher. 2 Kings 14 and verse 25. Apparently, Jonah foretold, I think it's obvious, he foretold the restoration of Israel. So thus, most students date Jonah from about 790. I think that's when he worked. The exact date is uncertain. Now, other than the brief note in 2 Kings, the only information found about Jonah is in the book that bears his name. So that note is 2 Kings 14 and verse 25. That's the only note that we have describing what he talked about. But I think that what he was talking about was, do you remember what Jonah prophesied about? What was the subject of his prophecy? The city that was the subject of his prophecy? Nineveh. Now, what was Nineveh? What nation was Nineveh of? Assyria. See that? Assyria. Well, what's about to happen? Assyria is about to go the way of all the earth. And Nineveh is not going to be doing very, very well. it's going to be in a real decline. So Jonah approaches at this point and says, here's what God says. What does he call upon the people of Nineveh to do? Repent, repent. And apparently they did. However, it didn't last a very long time. Not a very long time. All right. So anyway, one of the things that I've thought about, and I've told you this before, when we have a nation and we have a 250 years a nation has been, and we see things going on, some good men, some bad men. Sometimes, though, there's something that happens. Something that happens. And sometimes it signals the beginning of the end. And I don't ever know when it is. But I'm thinking. I'm not saying we are. But I'm thinking we may be looking at the beginning of an end.